This is the Suns Front Office Show, presented by National Bank of Arizona, the only bank you need, and brought to you by Coors Light. This season, we climb, proud partner of the Phoenix Suns.
Our weekly visit with the interim general manager of the Phoenix Suns, James Jones, joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. The Suns taking on the Detroit Pistons tomorrow. And joining us right now, the GM, the interim GM, James Jones, here on the Burns and Gamble Show. James, how are you this afternoon? Thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it.
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
How have you felt about your team overall? I mean, outside of this last game against the Bulls where you were really shorthanded, you didn't have Tyler, you didn't have Kelly Oubre, you didn't have Rashawn. I mean, this team went through a stretch for a few weeks there where you guys played good basketball. You showed the fans what you're capable of doing.
Yeah, no, the Chicago game was a tough game. You know, we have some injuries, but I thought our guys tried to battle back in that game, even though we got down early. So I was pleased with the effort. But recently, we've had some big wins. You know, for a young team, that's something to build on. You know, every day the guys are coming in here with the focus to finish the season strong. And when you're winning and you're growing together and you're learning how to win, it makes it fun. So everyone's on the same page, from the coaching staff to the players to the front office. We need to finish this season strong, and that's kind of the tone for the next 10 games.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of winning as many games as you can. We've been through the, you know, losing games to get the lottery pick, and, you know, I just think it's more important right now to win basketball games, to break the culture of losing, to let the guys enjoy wins. I mean, they went through a two-week stretch where they beat – you know, they beat Golden State, and they beat Milwaukee and the Lakers and the Knicks and Miami, and there was a lot of good wins there. And I just think for a two-week span, it was a nice reprieve for the guys to see that they can win and to learn how to win.
Yeah, and we've been hit with a string of injuries, but our guys know that, you know, that's not an excuse to not compete and not perform. You know, so they've been putting in the work. They've been playing with energy, playing together, and, you know, that's the stuff you build on. So winning is important. Playing well and competing is important. And for our guys, they believe that we can finish this season strong, and that's what we'll do.
6-4 in your last 10 before the loss to the Bulls the other night, a game in which you did not have Kelly Oubre in that game. It sure did look, at least to my eyes, like there was a correlation between the two. Have you gotten to the point where Oubre's bottom line value to you on a nightly basis is that impactful in terms of his energy and what he brings on the court?
You see that. I mean, you can feel it when he's on the floor and when he's off. He just plays with so much force and aggressiveness and energy, and it's infectious. That's his personality, and we miss him, and you can see it. But it's on our guys to step up and kind of replicate that, you know, try to manufacture that as a collective group. But for sure, you notice when Kelly's out there, and we're just, you know, hopeful that he can get back at some point and bring that to us on the court.
Was it a little disappointing not to see that against the Bulls a couple of nights ago, that the guys weren't able to replicate that kind of energy that they were missing?
I think you speak to every player. You know, coaches down there, they'll tell you that it's disappointing when we can't play to the level that we've set in the recent weeks. You know, we have an expectation that regardless of who's on the floor, we can play at a certain level. We didn't do that the entire game against Chicago. We did it in spurts, but you know, that's our new level of expectation, our new standard. Every guy that steps on the floor has to bring that level of energy.
What's your with 10 games remaining? What's your thoughts on the type of season DeAndre Ayton has had as a rookie?
Yeah, it's been impressive, and I know, you know, like we came into this thing with great expectation for him, and he set a very high goals for himself. But as a rookie, you know, thrust into this situation, I think he's handled the highs pretty well and the lows very well also. So we just want to see him continue to grow. Defensively, he's made tremendous strides the last 2 weeks at a point in the season where a lot of rookies start to wind it down and fall off the cliff. I think he's getting better. He's getting stronger. His teammates are lifting him up and holding him down in those instances where he hasn't played well, and he's responded positively to, you know, criticism and praise. So the kid's special, and I think that, you know, if he continues on this track, he'll be a very, very good player in this league for a long time.
If you had a chance for a do-over, would he still be your pick at number one overall, or would you consider something else?
Not a question. You don't have to ask me that question. Like, he knows if we do this again 100 times, DeAndre Ayton's our guy. We just believe that much. We believe in him that much. And if you watch us closely and if you watch what we do as we integrate him more and he gets a bigger piece of the pie, I think you'll come to the realization that DeAndre is the guy for us.
I think it's clearly this kid's going to be special. I mean, I think he's going to be great. And his numbers, I mean, legitimately stack up with some of the best rookie centers that have ever been drafted. I mean, going back to, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, I mean, his numbers, people may want him to do more, but statistically he is putting up some phenomenal numbers for a guy that doesn't have the ball and needs other people to get him the ball.
Yeah, he's putting in the work. I think you can't really see what DeAndre does every day in games just because that's not how we use him. That's not who he is for us right now. But in the future, going forward, as he becomes more comfortable, as he becomes, you know, a better playmaker off the dribble, off the pass, you know, in space, on the perimeter, I think you'll see all of the talents and gifts that he has become unlocked, and you'll see why he was the guy for us in the draft and would be that guy regardless of how many times we have a do-over.
James Jones, interim GM of the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Suns of the Pistons tomorrow. I see where, getting back to Kelly for a second, I see where he's already been ruled out for tomorrow's game. Do you have, with 10 games left, do you have any kind of a timetable for when he might be back for you guys?
I mean, well, he's day-to-day. You know, he felt some discomfort following the back-to-back games against Houston and New Orleans this past weekend. So we're just going to monitor it and get some rehab. I mean, he'll come and get treatment and see how he feels. But, you know, if Kelly can go, he'll go.
Everybody's wondering with T.J. Warren, only 10 games left to play, why you guys haven't just come down and shut him down. I mean, the feeling is that even if he comes back, he's going to be so limited. He hasn't played in so long. What could he really give you? With 10 games left, where are you? Are you still trying to get him back, or is that a pipe dream? It's likely that he's not going to play again this season.
No, he's working to get back, and we're pushing him, and he's pushing himself to get back. You know, collectively as a group, we all want him back. You know, we're fighting for something at the end of the season. You know, these guys have been grinding, and it's important for him as one of our senior players, one of our leaders, one of our best players, to fight with these guys to the end. And you know, it'll be tough getting him up to say prime shape and over the next 2 or 3 weeks, but it's important that as we wind down the season, everyone on the roster is together, is pulling together, is competing, because it's inspirational to see TJ finally get healthy and start to kind of pick it up, because that just means that our team is stronger and we need that to finish the season.
The Pistons are within, Brooklyn's within 2 games of them, so's Miami, Orlando's within 4 games. Do you, you know, take any extra pride for the integrity of the game when you're playing a team like that that's battling for something, to give it everything you have?
Of course. That's, you know, you always want to come out and play and compete to win. But it gives you a little, you know, playing spoiler is good, especially for young teams. You know that your opponent's fighting for something, and if you can knock them off or take them out, it means that you're taking another team's best shot. So we're motivated to win, but we're also motivated to play spoiler.
James, we appreciate it as always. Who do you got in the tournament, by the way? What do you got?
The NCAA?
Yes, sir.
Final.
Yeah. Did you fill out a bracket?
Me? Yeah, I have a bracket. And I'll tell you, I like I'm a Roy Williams fan. I like Carolina. I think they're a very good team, a balanced team. If I had to pick a team, I'd probably say Carolina.
Okay. It's funny. I'm looking up right now at True TV, and there's a commercial with Roy Williams, so maybe you're on to something.
I got them in my Final Four. Maybe I got Carolina in my Final Four, James.
Maybe that's destiny right there. Maybe.
Maybe.
All right.
We'll see.
James, good stuff. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, got it. James Jones, interim general manager of the Phoenix Suns, joining us on the Culture Automotive Group Sports Line. Culture Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Who do you have winning it all?
I mean, just Duke.
Don't sound.
I feel like bad.
Don't sound
like
so amused about it.
I feel bad that you're just Duke.
Be embarrassed by that. You don't.
Listen.
Be embarrassed. By
I only have 2-1 seeds in my Final Four. Okay.
Right.
I have a 2 seed, and I've got a 4 seed. In my Final Four.
That's not bad. That's not bad
so
at all.
I didn't go like chalk all the way.
Join us after Bickley and Murata this Friday at Marley's in Chandler as we kick off the first round of the NCAA tournament thanks to Santan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center giving away tickets and prizes while watching the madness unfold. Come see us and hang out with us Friday from Marley's. Check out the rewards page at arizonasports.com for more details on that. One team reportedly is thinking about making a move up for a quarterback in the NFL draft. There are dominoes. How do those dominoes affect the Cardinals? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Today we are live at the AT&T store in Tempe Marketplace. We are here in part in conjunction with Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, of course, the former executive in charge of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hall of Famer.
The Hall of Famer has founded and fronted the ARF and their mission to people rescue animals, animals rescuing people, the Animal Rescue Foundation. They've got a Pets and Vets program. It matches veterans with emotional support animals, provides free wellness clinics for the animals. They've placed more than 600 animals with military families, including 45 service dogs, just in the last year alone. It's a great, great cause. I mean, you talk about the emotional support these animals mean to these veterans, a lot of whom are dealing with post-traumatic stress issues, and how the dogs and the animals can help with that.
I have so much more respect now than I did in the past for the things Tony does. But, you know, my wife's very involved as an animal activist and helping animals. So I've helped her with her efforts, too. So I've become much more appreciative of things like this, like what Tony La Russa is doing.
AT&T is a terrific sponsor of it. If you want to donate to this organization, text ARF, A-R-F. That's for the Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF. Text it to 620-620, and we'll get you more information, and you can make a donation. All right, now this is interesting. This may mean everything to the Cardinals. This may mean nothing to the Cardinals, and it may not happen at all, given that the source is one of those NFL insiders who doesn't exactly have the spotless track record of like an Adam Schefter.
Okay.
Okay, right?
Okay.
I always feel like I have to warn everybody about that when we cite the work of Jason Lockenfor. It's just like, okay, just understand that we're not exactly talking about Schefter here, but he's, you know, sometimes he does get very good stuff. The Jets have let it known they are open for business with the 3rd overall pick in the draft, he writes. This we knew. I had heard that about a month ago. And that for the 2nd year in a row, it's very likely they'll complete a draft pick swap well before the actual draft begins. Remember, they made the Darnold trade way before the draft last year.
Yes.
He is reporting that league sources say Washington is already among the teams sniffing around, and with pretty much every GM in the league believing the Cardinals are going to take Kyler Murray, and with San Francisco likely to take Nick Bosa, the Jets could be sitting very pretty at number 3 with a pick for an avenue for a team that wants to jumpstart the Giants, get up, get to number 3, and take Dwayne Haskins before the Giants could at 6.
Okay, this is something we've never talked about. Because everything's focused on, you know, ultra-focused on Kyler Murray, and would a team move up to number 1 to take Murray if the Cardinals don't take him? You know, what if, you know, there has to be a team out there that's enamored with Haskins. And if that's the case, then that makes a lot of sense, that there could be a trade there to get up to number 3, and then that and that would push the Giants. So now if the Giants are sitting there at 6 saying, look, somebody's going to take Murray at 1. If it's not the Cardinals, it'll be somebody else. San Francisco, they're going to take Bosa. We're in a good spot at 6 to get Haskins. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to move up. We're in a good spot. If this starts getting out there, and if I'm the Giants, I might have to call the Cardinals and try to move up to number 1. Like, I might try to have to get ahead of these teams if I really am focused on getting that quarterback. Now, we don't know who the Giants are focused on. Are they focused on trading for Rosen? Could they be interested in Murray? Do they want Haskins? I mean, there's possibilities out there. It's not just one possibility for the Giants. But if there are teams that want to get ahead of them to get Haskins, if the Giants are sitting there thinking they're going to just sit at six and get Haskins, they could be wrong. Could be dead wrong.
And I think where the dominoes start to fall, and I think you started to go down this avenue a second ago. Okay, so let's say the Giants are looking at this and go, okay, well, our first choice would be Haskins because we wouldn't have to trade for him. But our second choice, if we can't get Haskins, would be to get Josh Rosen. Let's say a week from now, 3 days from now, Washington moves up to number three with the intention of taking Dwayne Haskins. Well, now, unless you move up to number one, if you're the Giants, that possibility's out. You are not going to get Dwayne Haskins unless you move up to number one. I guess you could move up to number two, but I would think San Francisco would be so enamored with getting Nick Bosa at number two, I don't know if they would move out.
Maybe they would.
I don't know. But that might, if that happens, then the Giants might go, okay, we have no choice. We have to trade for Josh Rosen. If Josh Rosen's even available, right? If they know they can't get Dwayne Haskins, if they know that he's going to be out of reach because the Jets trade out of three and somebody moves up and somebody does it with the intention of taking the Ohio State quarterback, that may make the Giants internally go, we liked Haskins more, but we like Rosen a lot too. Haskins is off the board. We have to go get Josh Rosen now.
Okay, so now you're going to trade for Rosen. What are you going to give up? Because if you sit there and you say, I want to give up my second-round pick for Josh Rosen, but there's somebody out there, say in New England, who has a better pick than, you know, their first-round pick is better than your second-round pick.
New England's at 32. The Giants in the second are at 37.
Right. You could get beat out there, too.
Yep.
So would you have to be ultra-aggressive and give up that pick that you just got from Cleveland?
Perhaps. Yep.
And that would be a home run for the Cardinals if they are trading Rosen. There's, make no mistake about it. If they get the 17th pick in this draft for Josh Rosen,
that's a home run.
It's a home run. Salvaged it.
It might not be value for value. You got him at 10. You'd be getting a 17 back, but you'd have two first-round picks, and you'd have three of the first 33 picks in this draft.
It would be a home run.
That's a salvage, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that much of a difference the way you say. You give up a first-rounder last year, and then you end up with a third-rounder?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Or maybe even a late second? People might be, you didn't get great value. If you end up with the 17th pick for a guy that you took 10th a year later, you're trying to get rid of anyway, that's tremendous value.
Field Yates, ESPN reporter, was on Doug and Wolf today, and he was asked about what teams should do in regards to Josh Rosen.
You said there's one thing every team needs to do about Josh Rosen. What is it?
Make a call to the Arizona Cardinals right away.
He says every team should call about Rosen, and here's the reason why other teams should be poking around.
But I think if I'm a team around the NFL, I'm poking around on it. If Arizona is entertaining offers, and maybe the reality for Arizona is this, no offer is even seriously entertained until the first night of the NFL draft, because at that point, Kyler Murray would be your quarterback going forward. But if it is going to entertain them, you know, like, I would just say that if you're a team around the NFL, whether you need a starter, whether you need a backup, whether you need a developmental player, that right there is a reasonable call to make.
It is a reasonable call to make.
The thing that teams are going to just love about that, you know, we say it all the time, is just the contract, the Rosen contract. I mean, it doesn't eat up any of your cap space for the next 3 years.
Yep.
So it's that, like, you're from the business standpoint, like, when you go to your cap guy, we're thinking about trading for Josh Rosen. You go to your cap guy. How does this affect us? It doesn't. Can you explain it to me? Yeah, he doesn't make any money. Like, he's going to count $4 million is his cap hit for 2019. That's his cap hit with the Cardinals. $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
His salary over the next 3 years is right around $2 million a year. So, like, you know, when, you know, because everybody's got cap guys. You go to these guys, they're going to be like, from a business standpoint, this is a no-brainer. He's not going to, like, if everything you want to do in the future to help your football team is not affected at all by trading for Josh Rosen.
March Madness tips off what's already tipped off, and with it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss. It's presented by Santan Ford.
Got my bracket right here.
Schwartz Laser Eye Center. I got to fill mine out here pretty quick. Text the word BOSS to 620-620. Sign up. Get your bracket. Compete for your shot at $1,500. Again, text the word BOSS to 620-620. They are in exactly the same spot as a year ago. If ASU basketball loses tonight, is this season a failure? We'll dive into that one next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, I'm going to ask Jordan or Sarah to pop on because I don't have the Bickley and Murata poll question in front of me, but I'm just going to come right out and say that this next part of the program is brought to you by a poll question from Bickley and Murata, in which they asked at some point online to their listeners, is this season a failure for ASU if they fail to win tonight's game against St. John's? And we were talking about this pre-show in our prep meeting, and it was astounding, I thought anyway, the number of people who said that, yes, it would be a failure if they failed to lose tonight's game.
I mean, I would agree with them. I mean, the goal is, I mean, last year you got to a play-in game and lost. This year you get to a play-in game and lose. You didn't improve on anything. I mean, you got back to the NCAA tournament, but, man, you just can't get to that Thursday-Friday game. So I would agree with that.
Jordan, what was the number? Or Sarah, if you have it back there.
I have it for you. It is an astounding 94% who say ASU has to win tonight's game for the season to be successful.
I totally agree.
I was expecting something in like the 70th percentile, the 80th percentile. Very rarely do we have a poll question where it goes into the 90s. Now, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Usually I'm not the win or it's a failure guy. Okay? Usually I'm not that extreme. I agree. If they lose tonight, the season's a failure. Can I tell you why?
A failure for those players. It's two ways to look at it. For the guys that are playing, it's a failure. Like, you expected to do more. Like, you didn't even get to the players. But for the program, it's a success. They made it to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row. They beat Kansas, you know, this year. They had some good wins. So for Bobby Hurley and building the program, I can sell that this was a successful year.
Gambo, if I may, don't you think they should have higher standards at this point in Bobby Hurley's tenure?
No, I think it takes time. I think it's Rome wasn't built in a day. Make two NCAA tournaments in a row, then make three in a row, then make four out of five or five out of six. And I think two in a row. Listen, this is the first time they've done this since Jimmy Carter was the president to get to two NCAA tournaments in a row.
Yeah,
Jimmy Carter. The peanut guy.
Here's why I would say it's a failure, okay? I understand what you're saying. Here's why I would say it's a failure.
Yeah.
I think you have to show progress, and progress is winning. I think getting in is somewhat akin to spinning your wheels in the mud. I think you need to get a little traction. Traction comes with winning a game. So you got in back-to-back years, first time since the Carter-Reagan days. Okay, fine. But to not win and to have that 2009 thing hanging over your head as the last time you won a game, I think you need that. To me, is why I would say it's a failure if they lose tonight.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
A failure because I think you have to. It's not enough just to say we got in. You have to win a game when you get there. That's
the
kind of progress.
To the players, if I'm a player, Remy Martin was on the team last year. Okay, he was on the team. He was a role player on that team. Remy Martin, 2 years in a row, can't win a game in the NCAA tournament. Yeah, that sucks. You know, Dort comes if he's a one-and-done guy. Didn't win a game in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's a failure. Like, that part's a failure. For the players, and to Bobby in particular, not being able to win a game is probably a failure. Losing to Syracuse, losing to St. John's. Bobby's a New Jersey kid. I mean, that was the heyday of the Big East with Syracuse and St. John's. Losing to each one of them probably hurts. I do honestly believe that there is a success that they can build off of by getting there 2 years in a row. That doesn't matter to the players, but it matters to the program. So I'm separating them, and I'm not trying to not give you an answer. To the players, it's a failure. Yeah, it's a failure. You should win this game.
I think the coach would tell you off the record it's a failure.
Yeah, he's expecting to do more with this team.
I think he would tell you privately it's a failure if they don't win this game.
Right, but then when he goes out knocking on somebody's door, how you doing? I'm Bobby Hurley. I like talked about ASU. You know, we've been to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row. That's a success.
Yeah.
That's a success.
I guess that to me is the part. That's the salesmanship of Bobby's job, right?
That's
the promoter part of being a basketball coach. I think that part of Bobby's job is not rooted 100% in reality. You're selling an idea. You're selling a concept. You're selling a perception. The reality, I think, if they lose tonight's game, he can go knock on some kid's door, and he'll be able to say with a straight face, we've made the NCAA tournament two straight years. But will he be able to say with a straight face to that kid, we're making progress as a program at the rate that I thought we were going
to? 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that's all anybody wanted from this program was a little level of consistency. We went to the NCAA tournament 3 or 4 out of 5 years.
And he's given that to us, but I think when you do that, you create the desire to want more.
Sure.
And so we're arguing the same thing here. I mean, you understand that, right? We're both arguing in the affirmative that it would be a failure if they don't win tonight's game. I understand your perspective. I just think, to me, that perspective is more rooted in how you sell the program than the actual state of the program. How you sell the program is, yes, progress. Look, back-to-back years, we're in the tournament. The actual state of the program, it would be a little, ooh, I would have thought you would have won one of these games
by now.
What's
success for ASU football right now? What do you think success would be for ASU football?
Success for ASU football would be
being a top four team, three out of four years in a conference?
Sure.
Okay. Get to some of the decent bowl games, not the pathetic bowl games, right? I mean, be an upper third team in the Pac-12.
Okay.
But if they do that 2 years in a row and they lose their bowl game each year, do we say that that's a disappointment? That it was a failure? So if they could get to be a top four team in their conference 2 years in a row in football, they go to a bowl game and they lose each one, do we say that's a failure?
Well, I mean, didn't Todd,
or do we say this is what we've always wanted?
Didn't Todd Graham do that his first couple of years?
And he won 10 games 2 years in a row.
He's not the coach of this team anymore because they expected more. He couldn't keep him there.
Because then your expectations then change.
And that's my point, is that my expectations for this program, based off of who they're recruiting and the success they're having during the regular season, I'm not ashamed to admit it, they're changing. They're changing. I'm not saying they need to go to the Sweet 16. I'm not saying they need to go to the round of 32. Is it asking too much for them to win a play-in game against St. John's?
No.
I mean, seriously, am I asking the world by asking them to win a play-in game against a team that was the last team into this tournament? I don't think that's asking a whole lot.
They were the second to last team into this tournament.
No, St. John's was the last team.
ASU.
Well, okay, but
yeah.
St. John's
it's not like ASU was clearly in.
Yeah, I don't think
it's not like this is a 12-5 matchup.
I really doubt. Well, you know, again, it comes to public versus private. Publicly, if they lose tonight, Bobby Hurley will say all the right things. Hey, we're making progress. Hey, I'm proud of our guys, blah, blah, blah. Inside, he's going to be thinking, oh, man, come on. We're better than this.
Yes.
We're better than. And I think.
We want more. We want more.
Damn right, baby.
I love that commercial.
Damn right. Damn straight. And I don't. You know me. Usually I'm not one of those, you know, rooted in absolutes where you got to win this or you're a failure. I'm not usually that guy, but
Friday,
I do think this season would be a failure if they don't. Yeah, it's time.
Friday, we're at Marley's. That game would be at 1 o'clock.
Yes.
Yeah, we want to be there with the crowd rooting for ASU. Yes. Yeah. From that aspect, to get to that game on Friday, you play Buffalo. It's not like you play in Kansas, Kentucky. It's not like you play in Duke or North Carolina or Michigan State or Tennessee.
Right.
You play in Buffalo.
Bobby,
you might be able to win that game too.
Bobby Hurley,
Buffalo
on Monday. What does a successful tournament look like to you?
So many teams are just, you know, are not playing anymore, and are so and it's so hard to get to this event. So, you know, in the initial stages of it, you're just so appreciative that you had a season that was worthy of playing in this event, and then you quickly move on, and it's all about, like, you know how much work you put in from July right through now, and it's all to give yourself an opportunity to try and win, you know, every week and see if you could advance to the next week. And there's only 68 teams that have a chance to win a championship, and that's what's driving us
right
now.
So you're happy to be there, but that only lasts so long. And after a while, that fades. And now it's about, I mean, to be able to win a game for the first time since James Harden was a freshman here, maybe it doesn't date back to the Carter administration, but it would be still a pretty nice feat for ASU to be able to say first tournament win since 2009.
Sure.
With a win tonight.
You know what? I mean, for all the players that are coming back next year, to get that experience of playing in these high pressure packed games. And, every game you play is a benefit to those players.
Yeah. From player contracts to the creation of new rules, the sport of baseball is changing right before our eyes. What does a Hall of Famer think of the current state of the game? We'll ask Tony La Russa. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Welcome back. It is the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Dinner of Champions benefiting Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation. You can get involved and donate to this great organization by texting ARF, A-R-F, to 620-620. And joining us right now to talk a little baseball and to talk about his dinner and his foundation, People Rescuing Animals, Animals Rescuing People, is Baseball Hall of Famer and former Diamondbacks executive Tony La Russa, who joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Tony, as always, good to hear your voice and good to see you involved with issues that matter very much to you. I know that for a fact.
Well, it's been a passion of our family for a long time, Gambo, and we're just starting our 29th year into the game. We never thought it would grow to be this important. And what's happened here in the last 7 years is that we take, some of the special dogs that we rescue, and we're putting with veterans with PTSD, and the effects are miraculous. And one of the ways that we pay for the program, the folks at Stake 44 is the third year that they shut it down. They put on this function, and we get a company like AT&T that jumps in there and gives us a bunch of change, and it all goes to the veteran. Because everything about our program, by the way, is totally cost-free to the veterans, whether it's health care for the dogs or any of the training sessions. So we're very fortunate, and we're really excited about the program.
I'll tell you, I've got a newfound respect for the things that you do. Just, in the last couple of years, my wife's become more of an animal activist, and, with projects like, Dolphin Project, trying to, keep dolphins out of tanks and saving the whales and the belugas from Russia. And so my wife's really has gotten involved, and with her getting involved, I've gotten involved. And, we've got a couple of great charities that we're involved in, to help the animals. So what you've been doing year after year after year now, seeing how involved my wife is, I have a newfound respect for how much effort you put in to helping in this case.
It's one of those things that's easy effort, because once you get inspired, just like going to work. I mean, I'm signed out of high school and I've never worked a day in my life, but in professional baseball. So, I mean, you do something you love, it's not work, it's inspiring. And when you do some good, the thing about our organization is we do rescue dogs and cats so they're not euthanized, but then we also put them with people with their needs. And, the players always say I work harder for them, for ARF and the animals than I do for them. And I say, well, as soon as you're as worthwhile as they are, I'd work harder for you, but you're not, so I don't.
I'm sure that goes over real well.
That's true.
Yeah, Tony La Russa, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, with his Dinner of Champions coming up for the Animal Rescue Foundation for Tony La Russa. If you don't mind, we'd love to pick your brain on a couple of baseball topics, starting with story number one. The reports are out there. Mike Trout, big money deal, and it once again kind of solidifies a guy who was born and raised in one organization, and it looks like he's going to play for that organization for basically his entire career.
Well, I think you got to take your hat off to a lot of people there. One, of course, is Mike and his family and the way he was raised. As we know, our ex-teammate Albert Pujols went over there in 2012, the year I retired. And as I walked in there the first day of spring training, I was working for MLB, he said, look, that's the best player I've ever seen. It was Mike as a rookie, and he's never changed. And then you talk to the organization, he's like just a great owner, and he made the commitment to keep that franchise player there. So I think it's a win-win for Mike and for the Angels.
I remember when Marvin Miller started free agency, and the first team that I remember being decimated was the A's. The A's lost Reggie Jackson and Joe Rudy and Bert Campaneris and Catfish Hunter. I mean, they lost all those great players from those teams in the early 70s because of free agency. So it is rare that we see a player spend his entire career with one team. It is. I mean, ever since free agency came into play in the mid-70s, we've seen a lot of player movement. So I do think it's special when you could have, Mariano Rivera
Rivera, Derek Jeter, and now, you know, hopefully a Mike Trout end their careers with one baseball team?
Well, it's a special combination. You've got to have the right player, and then it's not about the organization as much as the resources. I mean, you just saw that as much as the Diamondbacks and the fans, you know, loved and honored Paul Goldschmidt, you know, it's because of the situation and the resources, you know, they have to trade him. So it's a very unique kind of thing. You know, there's two sides to it. One is, you know, Mike is worth every penny he's getting. At the same time, though, you know, the game suffers sometimes with the coattail effect because somebody say, hey, I'm half as good as Mike and you should pay me $200 million. Well, that, you know, that's not the way it works, but that's how the players and agents come after you, and that makes it very difficult sometimes.
Did you see the writing on the wall when you were here at the end of that Paul Goldschmidt contract? Did you feel like at some point that you were going to have to trade him, or did you think it was possible that you'd be able to keep him long term?
I just knew that it was coming up against it. You know, they were going to have a tough decision to make. And, you know, the best case, you know, remember when it was 17, you get into the playoffs, if they could have gotten in last year, you know, and generated some more season tickets and had more money, then maybe it could have worked. But it's just an impossible decision. The Cardinals did the same thing with Albert Pujols as Goldie. You know, I mean, they ended up not being able to sign him, and the fans loved him, and they wanted him to stay. And I'm sure the organization felt the same way about Paul, but that's just the reality. That's why, as you mentioned, it's a very unique situation with a Jeter or a Trout stays. Well, you saw Harper left. You know, he's gone someplace, and it just doesn't happen. And it's just the nature of the game today.
Baseball Hall of Famer Tony La Russa, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, former Diamondback executive working for the Red Sox now, and, of course, a lifer in the game. We all know Tony very well. The rules changes that came down about a week and a half ago in Major League Baseball, the three-batter minimum for relievers next year, one trade deadline, not, in essence, two like we've seen for many years. What was your reaction, and what are your thoughts on those rule changes hitting Major League Baseball over the next couple years?
Well, I'll start with one that you didn't mention. That's the clock. You know, over the last few years, well, with the Diamondbacks especially, you know, I spent some time watching minor league games, and the clock really works. You know, there's plenty of time. 20 seconds is time for people to socialize, but at the same time, the pitcher gets the ball, he throws it, and the game moves on. I think the trading deadline, it creates some urgency. I do feel that some executives would have liked for that deadline to be August 15th because it does force some clubs into July and during July that, you know, you may be close to being in a wild card, and then you got to make a call about trading or staying. So, you know, there is some comment that maybe we can move it back to the 15th of August. But finally, this is the one that surprises most people. You know, when I was a manager, you just play by the rules. The rules said you could match up, so we matched up. But as a fan of the game, there are so many moves now that to me don't make sense because it has nothing to do with how a guy is going. It's a script. This guy comes to bat, you make a change. Well, pitching changes late in the game bring the game to a halt when you need to have the action keep moving. So I'm all for having them face more than one hitter. And I think as a coaching staff, you know, you just teach your left-hand reliever how to get a right-hand hitter out. There are ways to do it. I'm open to change up. Same thing with a right-hander against a left-hander. So I think it surprised some people, but I'm all, you know, my friend like Jim Leland, he doesn't like it. But an old-timer like me, I'm all for the reliever having a face more than one hitter and keep the game going.
Well, I think an old-timer like you, the thing that, you know, bothers me most about baseball right now, and you know I'm a baseball purist and how much I love the game, but you know, the shift. I mean, you're, you know, the players, the best players you had, I believe, were predominantly right-handed, whether it was Canseco or Maguire or Pujols. But these left-handed batters have no chance against this shift. I mean, you put three infielders on the right side, and you've got a guy who, you know, only pulls the ball and can't hit it the opposite way. I mean, I think it's a detriment. I think it's a harm to baseball because, you know, you got two options: to hit it over the fence, or because you're not going to hit it hard on the ground and get it through anywhere. You just got to place it perfectly to get it. I think the shift is a problem. You agree with that?
Well, I'm with you on that one. I would put two infielders on each side of the base. I also say, though, that, you know, that there is a failure on the side of the teams. If somebody is shifting, it's a very easy fundamental to teach a left-hand hitter how to look out over and just punch the ball to the other side of the field, you know, to start a rally when you're not trying to hit a home run. So I think they could do some things to keep the defense honest. But in the end, I agree with you. I think shifting is not necessary. I would put two infielders on the side. But the biggest culprit for me right now is, you know, there's a belief, a disrespect for RBIs and the manufacturing game. And, you know, when you, like last year, there were more strikeouts than hits. Now, that's absolutely bad baseball. And teams that put the ball in play win more games. So if you put the ball in play, you know, then it's going, you know, people are going to be more entertained. And I would agree with you. I would put the ball in play where, you know, it's even on each side of the infield.
For more information about Sony's Animal Rescue Foundation, you can text ARF, A-R-F, to 620-620. Find out about their Pets and Vets program, matching veterans with emotional support animals. Tony, as always, a real pleasure hearing your voice, picking your brain on baseball. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, I hope some folks can come out to dinner on the 24th. So thanks a lot. Anytime you need me, just let me know.
Tony La Russa joining us, Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. It's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. It seems like a Josh Rosen trade has become more about when as opposed to if he gets dealt. So do the Cardinals need to speed up the process to do right by Rosen? One national writer suggested as much. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.